Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 28th of June. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday edition. It is a very nice day outside. And I know many of you were up late last night. Many of you may not have even gone to sleep and watching what was the debate last night because it went late. The coverage went late. Maybe some of you were figuring out what to think, what to make of it. Maybe some of you were questioning the statements from your candidate of what they said and what they didn't say. Maybe some of you had ordered an online atlas and were figuring out how to put your home on the market. But whatever the case may be, you are here this morning, and I think we're going to try to run today's program, at least the part about the debate, sort of as a support group, and not as a support group for the supporters of any one candidate, but I think as a support group for those that are concerned about democracy, that are concerned about the future of the United States of America, for those of us who are concerned that the structural cracks in our system, both electoral and cultural, were very much on display over 90 minutes in a CNN debate that took place in Atlanta, Georgia. We know there will be a lot of letters. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. And as if that were not enough, right in the middle of this, we expect the Supreme Court to come down with key decisions. And we, of course, will discuss those as well. Okay, let's go. We welcome Bennington College faculty member, former EPA regional administrator, and president of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enk. I have not seen you in a long time, and it's wonderful to see your face and hear your voice. How are you?
Thanks, Joe. I thought in a moment like this, we need to be together as a family of WAMC. And thank goodness the fun drive is over.
Yes.
People, I mean, this is why the roundtable is so exceptional for moments like this. And we will all save money on therapy.
Well, you know, speak for yourself, but sure, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Jay Jochnowitz joins us, semi-retired editor-at-large, columnist, editorial writer from the Times Union newspaper. Woo-hoo. Jay Jochnowitz, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning. I'm Jay, and I'm a journalist. I just feel like that's a good way to open,
Support
the
group
session.
Open.
And back from last week, I was in both New Hampshire and Vermont, so I I'm well stocked with bourbon and other
syrup,
assorted
maple syrup
remedies.
Maple syrup bourbon
for pancakes.
Yes, absolutely. And Mark Whitman is with us, investment banker on Wall Street. I'll tell you a little tale out of school. But we were Tuesday. Mark was with us, and as Mark was walking out the door, he said, "God, I wish I was on Friday's show to talk about the debate." And I said, "Well, pal, you're in." And so he's here, and we couldn't be more thrilled. We're also waiting for Heather Mulligan, CEO of the Business Council of New York State. And I'm sure Heather will be here shortly, and we will have her join in on the conversation as well. All right. So let us talk about the debate last night. Here's what I will say about it. The two candidates disagreed on abortion, inflation, climate change, foreign affairs, and immigrations. But none of that really mattered because the contrast, the thing that was on everyone, I think, I speak for most, on everyone's mind was in the presentation. On the presentation for the current president of the United States and the presentation of the former president of the United States. It didn't take long. I believe in under 10 minutes, President Biden showed that he was truly struggling and struggled through that debate. He meandered. He mumbled. He was having a really difficult time making his case for a wildly often incoherent Donald Trump, who was just saying everything is horrible and we're about to explode, and yet there wasn't the counter to that in any meaningful way, in any meaningful way, shape, or form. I think I know what the audience is thinking, and I think I agree with you. I mean, people are going to say, look, it should be the substance, and it should be, you know, listen to Trump and listen to what he said and be incredibly frightened. Yes, check, absolutely. Mm-hmm. However, if there is going to be an antidote to that, and you feel there should be an antidote to that, that antidote was on stage last night, and that antidote did a really poor job in reflecting what he was going to do and had a hard time even describing what he had done. And I think I speak for many when I say that I kept thinking that it was going to get better, and it didn't. It just got a little bit worse.
There were moments of hope. I had a couple of, you know, I made a couple of notes.
Because we were looking for it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That first long silence when he was struggling for the words and finally came out with, we beat Medicaid.
We've beat Medicare.
Medicare was, I can't say out on radio what I said. And I didn't want to upset my wife,
who's
very sensitive about these matters, and who went into this, you know, already a little depressed. And I just didn't want to be saying this is a disaster, you know, from the start. So, you know, there were a few zingers. He got in, you know, the complainer line I loved.
Yeah, being a whiner. Yeah, that was good.
It was great. But again, you're absolutely right, Joe. We were looking for, is he going to come out of it?
And he didn't. And the problem was is widely, Trump was. Trump was bluster. He was deflecting. He wasn't answering the questions. He was taking the time. But dare I say, and I know people will get mad at me about this, but he was, in his way, articulate. Also, I would even dare to say, weirdly presidential. If you weren't listening to the actual content.
Oh, I think he was forced into that by the format. And that's the really fascinating thing, that they did this format with the kill switch and everything, you know, with the mute button and everything else to keep the debate civilized and presidential. And that forced Donald Trump to be presidential. He couldn't over-talk, you know, he couldn't talk over Joe Biden. He couldn't interrupt. He couldn't do. So when he stopped talking, he just stopped.
But the other thing, one last thing I just want to say is that about the debate, I do think it's important. And from my understanding, unless this is not true, but from my understanding from both campaigns, this format, which to me, I thought the moderators did a great job, but they became almost irrelevant because they were just
they did a terrible job, Joe. You were talking about Dana Bash and Jake Tapper?
Yes.
Who did no fact-checking whatsoever?
Because
were those the
Biden,
rules?
Because the Biden campaign said that they did not want to be fact-checked. They wanted their candidate to fact-check the president.
Wow.
And that was the rules of the debate, and those were the rules that were put on the table by the Biden campaign.
Well, I take that back. What a ridiculous thing for them to suggest.
I think, and you know, the New York Times and other news outlets had suggested this as that these were the rules. And one more thing, Mark, and I want you to then take over. But you know, the other thing that struck me, we can go. Obviously, we'll talk about this a lot, but you have two men who are running for president of the United States who had trouble filling 2 minutes. You have 82 seconds left, sir, to describe what you were going to do about immigration, what you were going to do about climate change, what you were going to do about health care. That was also extremely frustrating and I think ultimately concerning. Heather Mulligan has joined us, CEO of the Business Council of New York State. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. Someone ripped the keypad off of your parking thing outside, so you have to kind of guess where the letters go.
So
I had an interesting time. I had to walk a little bit and go find another one that worked because where you punch in your plate and more time, that's the whole thing is gone.
Okay, get the app.
I know.
It's really easy.
I know. I can't have another parking ticket. There was a time when I was legendary.
Yeah.
I once signed a car over to the city of Albany because I owed so much in parking, more than the car was worth.
Oh my.
So.
So, Heather, I'll bring you up to speed. We're talking about the debate.
There was a debate? What? Did I miss something?
Okay. Mark Whitman.
First, a comment on the format of the debate. I think it's actually interesting if you think about the COVID debate where Biden did the best. Trump was constantly interrupting Joe Biden. He never got to finish his answers. I'm sure that the Biden campaign today regrets having those mics turn off because Biden would have benefited from Trump jumping in. Biden couldn't fill a minute or 2 minutes far too often. I think if you read, for instance, today, the Washington Post, they blame the moderators. What happened yesterday was not the moderators' fault. Let's get real. What happened yesterday was we have a Democratic candidate who most of us believe is the Democrats are the better choice in this race, who is demonstrably behind in this election within a polling system that shows very little movement. This was the one chance for him to change the nature of the election and to make gains and to shake things up. He utterly failed at best. More likely, he lost ground last night. And the Democrats now have to wake up and figure out what they want to do. I hate losing, but I hate losing without taking every measure available to me to try and avoid losing, particularly given what's on the line.
I agree with you. I don't think there's any doubt about it. It was severely hurt and compromised by that performance, and we were talking about this just at the beginning, and I agree with Jay. There were moments where you were maybe this is the time, but there was so much damage done so quickly.
I was hopeful. If you remember the fifth Star Wars movie, Yoda sort of waddles into this lightsaber battle with the bad guy, can barely walk, and then somehow turns out to be a ninja for 4 minutes, vanquishes the bad guy, and limps back out. I was hoping that's what I would see last night. I saw a man limp onto the stage, blankly stare into the teleprompter. He clearly had been coached in what to say, but couldn't get to it consistently over and over again. The main issue he had to overcome last night was perceptions about his age and his ability to do the job. What he did was reinforce those concerns. Yoda didn't even make it out of the room. We had to take his lightsaber away.
You know, I love that analogy. I just want to make 2 points before we go on to everybody else. I do think, one, and maybe this is just me, but Van Jones made this point on CNN last night, and I think it was a good one. I felt sorry for him. I felt really bad for him. He put himself in that position. He's running for president. He knew where he was. He knew what he was getting into. I don't think, and I don't say this facetiously, but if I were out, both my parents have passed, but if I were out with my mother or father and they acted in such a way, I would be calling my siblings and saying, I think we have to figure out what to do. And I think that's what the Democratic Party is doing this morning. We're going to skip the bottom of the hour news, Mike, because we're going to keep going and hear from everybody. But Judith, what do you think?
Well, keeping the movie analogy going, I think this is more like the ending of Thelma and Louise, and the whole country is
in that
is going
in
over
the
cliff. Yes. Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis going over the cliff.
Oh, spoiler alert. Come on.
Everyone has seen Thelma and Louise.
There was a very nice-looking young Brad Pitt in that movie, if I recall.
So the stakes could not be higher. I thought Biden would do okay, and I started to worry on Sunday when I read the New York Times article that he basically only listens to four old white guys, Ted Kaufman, Ricchetti, Ron Klain, and some other guy. And I'm like, oh, this is a little bit of a bubble, and they are not being honest with him. Look, I'm going to vote for Biden. I'm going to campaign for Biden. I'm really upset that Biden and his family and all of his political advisors allowed the country to get to this moment. I mean, there's a very good chance that unless there's a change, last night will define the outcome of this election, and the stakes are so high. Everyone expected Trump to be a bully, to lie, to be bombastic. Everyone was tuning in to see, is Biden up to the job? You know, after the fact, the party said he had a cold. Well, you can't really explain this away with a cold.
They actually said that 15 minutes in.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is not.
You can't spin this.
This is not improved by Dayquil, folks.
Right. And I thought. The first, 5 minutes, it was over. Like, the first five
well,
minutes.
When he walked out on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the initial, oh,
we're
God.
We're used to the shuffle. I will now publicly admit, I did not comprehend how bad Biden was. There is a reason why his staff have kept him away from public settings, because they were afraid of what we saw last night, and that is political malpractice. The stakes could not be higher, and I think it's pretty obvious what needs to happen next.
I want to get into that. Obviously, we have to have a discussion of what happens next, and I want to get into that. I also want to hear from our other two panelists. I mean, one of the things that you keep on saying is this malpractice. We kept on hearing this, and this was the narrative that was coming from largely Republicans. This is who this guy is. This is what's happening. And the Republicans who were the Democrats who were defending him kept on saying, this is not the guy I see in the Oval Office. This is not the guy I see in the room. He's, turning cartwheels, and he's doing this, and he's, got all the plates spinning at the same time. And then you think, well, okay, so the Republicans are describing the worst case scenario. And then the worst case scenario walked out on stage at the studio in CNN land, formerly Sid and Marty Krofft amusement park world.
Yes.
I think was the moment where you're like, oh, dear.
And this is why primaries are important. I know Democrats feel like primaries are too messy. Everyone spends money. They beat each other up. A legitimate primary process, this would have been vetted much earlier. But the Democratic Party really discouraged a primary. Dean Phillips, whoever he is, he ran. That wasn't real. But if there was a primary, we would have all, as American voters, known what we were facing.
And the other thing, again, I'm going to keep harping on this point because I think it's important. Not only that, because you said political malpractice, and I agree with you entirely. The campaign, the debate, the rules, these were the rules that the Biden campaign wanted. They got almost everything they wanted to put the best show on for their candidate. Mm-hmm. And that should worry us all, too. Jay.
I was reminded of the Obama-Romney debate, the first one.
Yes.
And we wrote an editorial after that. You know, he I mean, it's like Obama thought he could phone that one in. And it was stunning how, you know, I have covered debates for 40 years. And I have rarely seen a decisive debate where you could say this person lost, this person won. You know, everybody likes to say it. The campaigns like to say it. But that was one where I said, wow, Obama really lost that debate. And he's going to lose the election if this is how he prosecutes the campaign. And we wrote an editorial to that effect. And he came back in and it was bam. You know, it was great. He was wonderful. He just cleaned Romney's clock on the next one. I have no hope that this was just an off night for Joe Biden, and that he's going to, you know, his next performance is going to wow America. It is not the case. In every way, he was, it was troubling, physically, emotionally, context-wise. He looked like someone who was confused on the stage as to what he was even doing there at times. So I don't see that. See that happening. And there was no clarity of message. It was just whoever these four people were coaching him. I think they overloaded him and never sharpened his, helped him sharpen the message.
Overload, I think, is a great, a great term.
He had, as several people have said, he had a couple of key things he had to do last night. One was dispel the notion that he was, frail. That he was diminished in capacity, and the other was there is just this narrow band of voters in America who have not made up their minds, and if you haven't figured out that Donald Trump is a con man, and just wholly unsuited for the presidency at this point, you're not changing your mind, and if you're in for Joe Biden, well. The same thing. You're probably not going to change your mind because you're either in it for Joe Biden or you're in it because you don't want Donald Trump. But so that narrow band had to be convinced in some way. And I think it's all about style at that point and a very sharp message. And he didn't deliver either of those. And I think he lost that narrow band. I think the polls are going to show that. And I think he may not have lost in the polls the support that he had, but I think a lot of people are there's a lot less enthusiasm about going to the polls. So,
well, I would say the polar opposite to enthusiasm, great concern and worry for who is running the country, not only in the next 4 years, but in the next 4 months.
Yeah. Who is running the country? That's a really good question.
And so
right
who
now.
Is? I mean, who and is it this cabal of white guys who are around him, old white guys, as you pointed
but,
out?
But he does. So he has a decent administration. So, Michael Regan is running the EPA and Pete Buttigieg is running transportation. He made good choices on appointments. I'm not worried about the next 4 months because he's got good people there. Mm. We do have to ask ourselves the ethical question, putting aside Trump and who wins, can we elect a president who is so diminished for the next 4 years?
It's a long time.
Heather Mulligan.
So I had my focus group. My focus group was a sibling who I would say is very apolitical, leans left, and two college students. And I think there was unanimously they said, wow, Biden should not be on the stage. He can't be president. These are people that were probably likely to be Biden voters prior to this debate. And I think that he lost support, significant support. These are not double haters. I watched an interview with a group of the so-called double haters, people who don't like Biden or Trump, and every single one of them, they didn't come right out and say that they were going to vote for Trump, but they all said that they would not vote for Biden.
I bet you some will vote for Bobby Kennedy.
Right. Well, and God so my sibling asked me about him. Yeah. Is he viable? And I'm like, well, he was doing okay until he had the worm in the brain conversation, But I mean, realistically, he can't win. He's not going to be on enough state ballots to even make the cut. And I think Biden campaign made a mistake by insisting on having it this early. And it was done primarily to prevent him from having enough momentum to get on the stage with them. So, I mean, what a train wreck for the Biden campaign. You know it's bad when you go on. I always flip back and forth, and I went on Fox afterwards, and one of the usual, you know, barracudas basically said, I actually felt sorry for Biden, you know, with what is probably not genuine but seemed, you know, genuine empathy. It was just terrible. And it's really terrible when Trump starts looking like a presidential
candidate.
Yeah. So I mean, my personal view is I think the Democrats made a huge mistake. I think they know they did. And I think they're probably going to get their act together and figure something out. It can be done. You know, I mean, Carter did it when he was running. He did a somewhat brokered conventional, not pure. But I think that there is a way to get another candidate. But the question is, who is that?
Well, who and who has the momentum on that? I don't know. I mean, that's a whole. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I just want to. The one thing that frustrates me about. So if we're moving to Plan B, which I think we do. And by the way, I before we're out of the studio, I'd like to talk personally. I've done it before. I think everybody in this country and probably many in the world should be ready for a Plan B. By the way, I don't think either of those guys look presidential. Give me a break.
Well,
Trump is
more presidential than
but, so I would rather have the cabal than Trump, but I can't get the cabal to win the election. I want to win the election.
I mean, look, we have a lot of people, and I, you know, I could hear them in my head last night. I could hear our listeners typing in the future of saying to us, okay, but you're not talking about the substance. I would argue, right, we're not talking about the substance because we never got anything substantive from the Biden or the Democratic campaign on this because they were unable to speak and to articulate that message in any coherent way. Well, I wish we were talking about specifics. I wish we were talking about the content. I wish we were talking about what was the key issues.
I have a more agnostic approach, which is it doesn't matter because you got to win. Right.
Back to the, absolutely.
So the one thing about what happens next, there's only one person on this planet who can change who's at the top of the Democratic ticket.
Joe Biden.
There is no party. Let's stop that one. There's no party. Mm-hmm. There could be a party if Joe Biden concedes.
we both said a different name, by the way.
Did I say?
You said Joe Biden. I said Jill Biden.
Jill.
Oh, well, okay. But the two of them. It's fair.
I blame her, too.
Oh,
I do too. Look, I do too, and that
she knows,
and that the party afterwards of saying how
terrible,
God,
embarrassing,
embarrassing,
and he's staring off.
Yeah, and then just the ending was, I think on CNN they were like, oh well, maybe we should listen to him. Chris Wallace is like, should we listen to him? They're like, yeah, let's listen to him. And then we listen to him, we're like, oh, let's not listen to him anymore.
But I Mark, your point, I want to push back a little bit. This, you know. This debate didn't happen in October. It happened in late June.
Thank God.
There is now time for a grassroots movement to replace Biden. We all got texts last night asking us to donate. I wrote back, Biden cannot be on the ticket. We need a strategy. This is not going to come from the Democratic Party. It's not going to come from the K Street lobbyists. It's got to come from the bottom up where, you know, activists need to organize and say we cannot have Trump and pressure the Democrats to put forward another candidate. And I almost don't care who the candidate is, except not Joe Manchin.
But there are no Democrats. It's Joe Biden. If you want to pressure, maybe, and Jill. But the point being is, if you want to start a pressure campaign, it's not the Democrats. It is Joe Biden, Jill Biden, and then maybe there are some others.
So
Joe Biden listens. But it's only people Joe Biden listens to. He needs to take himself out of this race.
You know, Van Jones, again, I'm gonna quote him, but he was getting a text message. He seemed to intimate that he got a text message from Barack Obama, who was showing great concern over this. And it brought up the question of, you know, who do you want to have in the room to have the conversation of, like, it's maybe it's time to
and
think
about
this.
And it can't be today. It has to be Monday.
Right. Or and
I've thought this through.
And Schumer. Because there's a friendship, and also Obama, obviously his wife and the other.
Oh, probably Bill Clinton too, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's going to become very apparent very quickly. I think there's going to be two pressures on Biden that go beyond whether Biden wants to do this or not. One is, I think the fundraising is going to dry up real fast.
Yeah.
And he's going to be confronted with that. We can't take out any more ads, Joe. We don't have enough
money.
Well,
and then you have the Harris problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're gonna splinter some of the party if she is not the nominee and she can't win against Trump. So
I mean, I'll give her credit in her interview with Anderson Cooper last night. I thought she made the best of a very bad situation.
Agreed.
And I think she was, you know, she deflected as you would in saying, you know, Anderson Cooper ended by saying, is this the guy who you work with every day? And she said, the guy I work with over the last 3.5 years. And it's a deflection, mm-hmm. but it was, I think at least it was
respectful
yep. and powerful. All right. We have a the letters.
Oh, boy.
I haven't even given the address on purpose because I knew we were just going to naturally get a lot. But the address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'll get to as many as we can. I do want to just remind you that we are also waiting for these Supreme Court decisions. So we'll probably be in and out a little bit as to
or under the table.
What we discuss and figure it all out. So we welcome you, panel@wamc.org. Now I'm also really self-conscious about any time that I trip over a word. I'm like, oh, God, I'm not worthy. panel@wamc.org.
You could run. You could run.
You too could run for president.
I've been playing out a lot of hypotheticals in my mind. I've been writing your name down next to mine.
Good morning. Listening to artists performing at the Fryhofer Saratoga Jazz Festival this Saturday and Sunday. If we ever needed a palate cleanser in our lives, have a little music to try to soothe the savage beast within us, that what a wonderful opportunity to attend the Jazz Festival. You can find out more information by going to spac.org, and you can see all the performers that we have played throughout the morning and will play throughout the morning by going to wamc.org/roundtable. Okay, let's go
home.
To what?
Home.
Yes. Home, under the covers.
Yeah.
I was going to, you know, yesterday I told the story about my first night terror. This was worse. And I was awake, and man. So, the problem with going back to bed is, I don't know about you all, I didn't sleep real well. That was a lot of stimulation.
Did anybody look at Facebook during, or because it was all, make it stop, this is awful, cringe. I mean, like, everyone on both sides. It was pretty obvious, I think, right from the beginning that it was kind of a train wreck.
23 minutes after 9 o'clock, my oldest brother texted me and said, I just turned the television off. Mm. And then at 9:31, he called me and he said, has it gotten any better? And I said, no.
Look away.
And he said, okay. And then at 9:52... he called me and he said, I had to turn it back on, but I'm turning it back on. I mean, I think that's sort of how people
I think that happened to a lot of people. I was physically nauseous after 10 minutes. I really felt sick.
My sibling said, I feel like I'm going to throw up.
Yeah. The future of the country is online.
Well, that's what
online.
I said. This is a support
more,
group because of not just over one candidate over the other, but just of where we are.
Yeah.
That, I mean, look. How many times in this program has somebody, whether it be a listener or a panelist or me, say, this is the best we can do?
Right.
And yesterday, I mean, that became really apparent.
Imagine where we're going to be 1 year from today if Trump wins.
It's funny. I never got to where you got.
You weren't physically ill?
It's the beauty of being a journalist.
Yeah.
It's I'm taking notes. I have a responsibility to know everything that happened tonight. I can't turn it off. And I need to be, you know, I need to be thinking about, you know, how, what is the context of this? What does this look like tomorrow? What's the big picture? So I won't say I had a wonderful time.
I'll give you, certainly your experience is your experience. I was texting last night with a lot of current and past journalists who were, had a bucket next to them.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, we know you're strong.
Mm-hmm. Did you write down the golf part, though?
Oh, God.
Golf.
You know, Joe Biden once had a 6 handicap when he was vice president. And Trump says you couldn't hit the ball 50 yards. Oh, I'm like, what are we like?
And why did Biden engage?
No, I know. So stupid.
That's when I screamed at the television, yeah. Where I was just like, stop. Why are we talking about golf? Stop talking about golf.
That's when I went into a fetal position.
Yes.
If you remember in the last debates, that was the moment similar to when Biden looked at the camera and said, it's not about us. It's about the American people. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm going to do. And instead, this time round, he offered the golf match. I thought I had stumbled into a bar in West Palm Beach, for God's sake. Right. I mean, it was gruesome.
These weren't senior championships.
Professional
championships.
Yeah, I came in. What?
We believe
won.
At my club.
Yeah. Wait, you won? No way.
It was also a moment that Biden could have brought up the how much golfing the man who criticized Barack Obama for golfing did, and how much it cost the country, and how much he ripped off the country by charging exorbitant rates for the Secret Service to stay at his club.
But not to mention the greenhouse gas emissions of the right. plane going back and forth every weekend to Florida.
I did want to mention one thing.
Yes, then we get a lot of letters.
Okay.
But go ahead.
I said there were two things that could move the dial beyond Joe Biden himself moving the dial. And one of them is just the fundraising drying up. The other is, and I was thinking about this on the way in, No Labels gave up the third-party race idea a while back. I think they are seriously rethinking that at this point.
I agree.
And if they make an announcement, I think the Democrats are going to say, we need to do something right now, because a third-party candidate is the end.
Chris Christie!
Oh, God.
All right. Oh, God. Here are the letters. Judith writes, not our Judith, but a different Judith, writes, my atheist prayer. Biden accepts his limitations and decides to retire at the end of his term. As an honored elder statesman instead of a losing presidential candidate, announces his retirement and opens the contest even before the convention. Someone not Harris wins the Democratic contest. My preference would be Gavin Newsom. Debates Trump, who, when repeatedly confronted, loses his mind and shows who and what he really is. Democrats win the presidency, the Senate, the Congress, etc. Democracy saves. See, we can do it. That's Judith. So that's a good atheist prayer.
Yeah. Okay. Atheists know how to pray.
The problem with Newsom is that he can't win the center of the country. I mean, I think absolutely Newsom could crush Trump in a debate. He's really good on his feet. He's really good in an interview. But he's the governor of California. And there's a lot of the country that if they had to pledge one thing, it's that they want to not be California.
But we haven't heard him take a message nationally. And that, you know, Reagan successfully did that.
That's true.
Not just as a governor of California. I mean, he was a conservative. So,
right.
So you know, he didn't have to convince people.
I mean, Schwarzenegger, if he was governor and was running, he could win, right? Mm-hmm. I just don't think Newsom can win.
Is he a U.S. citizen?
No.
No, he can't run. I mean, that's,
He'd
you know.
Be very good on climate change. I think we could insert many, many names. Mm-hmm. That I think the hard thing is convincing Joe Biden to step aside, and there are a dozen plus names. It has to be someone who's recognizable and who's competent. That's all we need.
You know, I mentioned this. I mentioned this
coherent
a few days ago, and I just it keeps popping into my mind, and it certainly popped into my mind last night as I was watching the debate. But there was a lot of hand wringing during the 2020 campaign, and where during the primary, before Joe Biden did well in South Carolina, as to what are we going to do, and do we have a strong candidate to go up against Donald Trump? And the answer for a moment, for a millisecond, was Mike Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's very old.
And let's get him in. And then he was in for about a week. and it didn't go well. And I'm just, I see the possibility of that happening again. Like, we need somebody else, we need somebody else, we need somebody else. Here's who we have. Oh, let's tear them down.
But I think you tweak that premise a little bit. I mean, I really appreciate Mike Bloomberg and his presidential race. I don't know why it didn't work, but it was a nanosecond. I think it's got to be someone who's already tested. You know, Bloomberg was mayor of the city of New York, which is pretty big, but that's not a national stage. So it's got to be someone who's run before, who's well known as a good governor, or who has a very good reputation in the Senate. There's not going to be a lot of time here. And even though I 10 minutes ago said the good thing about primaries is you vet people, here they're going to have to come together. You can't have an insane Chicago convention where there are five people right. duking it out and then everyone's divided. The adults in the room have to find someone who is competent, who has name recognition, who can govern.
So are there adults in the room? Question number one. Question
Unclear.
Number two, the Democrats aren't known for that.
Right.
Well, and I think there's another issue also, which is you need a glide path for Harris. Because you can't
yes.
disrespect. I mean, under ordinary circumstances, she would be the logical next choice. And I think it's pretty clear that she would not win as against Trump. Right. I think it, probably she would do better than a lot of people think. But she's not popular. Her numbers are terrible. So I think you have to. And she was not a governor. She was
attorney general.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. But not.
She doesn't
have not a governor,
management
not a
skills.
Senator.
Right.
She doesn't have that sort of gravitas, I think, that she would need.
Back to the atheist prayer, but mm-hmm. is to have her in the room
right.
talking
oh, yeah.
to Joe Biden and saying, I would like to continue to be the vice president of the United
right.
States and bring so-and-so on as now. Is that going to happen? I don't you know.
Now, remember on the West Wing
yes.
when Matt Santos won,
yes.
he made Arnie Vinnick the Secretary of State. And that might be prestigious enough. I think as Secretary of State, you get more done than by vice president. And it's not like Biden has utilized Kamala Harris as vice president. Mm-hmm. The issues he's asked her to solve are almost unsolvable.
So we have the debate, and then we're going to have the Supreme Court in about 10 minutes. And then over the next maybe the weekend we're going to hear perhaps who the vice presidential choice is
for Trump yeah
and so these are a lot of news cycles we have to get through as the Democrats figure out what they're going to do, if anything.
Well, if he thinks that the top of the ticket is going to change on the Democratic side, he may pause. He might hold off. I mean, right now,
yeah.
I think, you know.
This news cycle helps him.
Yeah.
He should just keep playing golf and not say
yeah.
a word.
Yeah.
He's winning those championships. All right. Let's a couple letters before we go to a break. Our responsibility as Democrats at this juncture is to create a mass movement calling Biden to pass the baton, period. I think there is a consensus building on that point, although it's still, to me, I agree with that. To me, it still seems far-fetched. Like, will it actually happen? I don't know.
24 hours ago, that was correct. I don't think it's
That's
correct today.
That's a lot today. Of ego to push
yeah.
aside
yeah.
into
yeah.
into a moving van.
Yeah, he needs to put the country first.
Larry says, what about Hakeem Jeffries? Then we go to Larry. No, that was the same letter. My apologies. Let's go to this. The fourth person in line currently for the presidency of the United States would be a good candidate, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. That goes to your point about the power of that office. Jeff says, I've written to the panel in the past to voice my opposition to the debate. My reasons prior to last night were the debate gives legitimacy to a criminal. I did not anticipate that Biden would perform so badly. So now Trump has been gifted legitimacy. We can't pull that genie back in the bottle. Trump has his fastball last night, and he did end up looking oddly presidential. He's still a criminal. I don't see how Democrats can recover on such short notice. Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Trump can rightly crow that he sent the Democrats into a fiery tailspin. We will fight the rest of this campaign on our back foot. That is a great letter. I mean, I think a very
It lays out the badness of the situation.
Yes, but I think it's very truthful.
Yeah. Does he have a solution?
No.
He's got a good grasp of the situation.
No. I'd rather have the old guy than the despot, full stop. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we all would rather. I mean, everyone
right.
in this room,
but
I think everyone would.
But will he win?
Right. You got to win. And I don't know. Chris says, please stop making jokes about what happened last night. There's nothing funny about the predicament that our country finds itself in this morning. I don't think we're joking about it at all. I think it was bad. And there is gallows humor and everything. Look, if you don't laugh, you don't cry. We've been talking about not being able to sleep, having night terrors, and being in the fetal position for most of the evening. There weren't a lot of chuckles in our households last night. I think that I understand the point, but by the same token, if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. Yeah. But I started off the show today by saying, this isn't about one candidate. This is about the way we choose a president of the United States. And that process seems to be really broken.
Yep.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Again, we'll be watching the Supreme Court, and we'll also be continuing our conversation about the debate last night. We welcome your comments. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, how I wish you'll wake up one day. Just let me say that when I talk to you, oh, Cupid walks.
Good morning. Yeah. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Judith Eng, Jay Jognowitz, Mark Whitman, and Heather Mulligan making up the group this morning. We're talking about the debate, and we have a lot of letters. Boy, do we have a lot of letters. So I'm going to go through those. Please, at any point, if you'd like to jump in, panelists, please do. And comment as you see fit. Paul says, a brief word about the moderators. They should never have allowed Trump and at times Biden to pivot back to something already covered. They should have simply said that they had just asked a new question that needed to be answered. No further explanation of a previous topic allowed. I agree with that. I do think it was, that by going, okay, but the question I asked you was, will you accept the results of of an election? And a question that was never answered.
I forgot they were there for a while.
I did too.
And did we really need two? They were both terrible.
Well, I thought they did do a good job of making sure, allowing the candidates, because I think it's fair in a debate that if your opponent says something that you haven't covered and you need to address that, you use some of your time, and that's your problem, in the end, to use up some time that you could use on the next issue. But I liked the way I don't think they ever lost track of what the question was, and they made them come back to it and say,
they
I
never
asked
lost
you this.
I think a lot of people were worried about as to, the bias question as to how they were going to respond and if they were going to roll their eyes at times. And they didn't. they kept going. And I don't know. I mean, that's like hosting the Oscars. Who the hell wants that job? why do people, anybody?
Joe, you would have done a better job moderating.
Well, you're very nice.
This is like complaining about the color of the rope on the gallows.
I know. I mean, you're right.
Who cares?
Good.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, first off, the format was what the Biden campaign wanted, right? Mm-hmm. The fact-checking issue, should they have fact-checked him? No, I don't think they should have. I think they were right that's up to the campaigns to do. Unfortunately, the way they set the format up, I mean, they didn't. Biden never had the acuity to come back and actually say, that he did a couple times say, oh, he's lying. But that's
abortion.
Right. I mean, it just
if you were ever on a gold plate given a huge package with a big pearly bow.
Right.
To say, here is an issue that I can talk about and articulate.
Right.
And couldn't.
No.
And the same on climate change.
And the same on climate change.
He could have just said, confirmed reports that $1 billion in campaign contributions, I will repeal all environmental regulations. That's all he had to say.
Your face immediately flashed in mind when Donald Trump said, we have the best H2O.
Oh, God.
Right,
I
H2O.
I did think of you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, poor Judith. I can't wait. All right.
It's funny because the cleanest air thing that he mentioned, there was a hot second where the environment was slightly better, but it was because everything was shut down, right?
Right.
And I'm
right.
sure During that's COVID, what his that's campaign what staff was referring yeah. to when they said, well, the environment was actually cleaner, wow.
We have the best air. We have the best water.
And inflation. He could have dealt with inflation really well without getting too wonky about it, to simply explain that there were, I think arguably there were two major factors, a pent-up demand from a pandemic and a lot of cash in people's pockets, and a supply chain problem all around the world. And we're dealing with it. We're doing our best. It's going to take time. Things are cooling down. Here's where we are.
I mean, you're an editor. Weren't you at times also like screaming at the TV saying, please use verbs for both of them? Like, please. Like, what
please
are you talking about?
And put periods. Do complete
right.
sentences.
Right. What are you talking about? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, back to letters. Matt says, Biden's wife must see and must know how precarious his position mm-hmm. is. Why isn't she encouraging him to relinquish his throne, quote unquote, for someone more capable and, yes, younger, instead of keeping up the charade that there's nothing wrong and he's perfectly competent? He's not. If we don't want to have 4 years of a neo-fascist running our country, she has to sit Joe down and lay out the reality to him. That's a lot of pressure to put on someone, I think, but it seems to be she is someone he listens to. We know that from the history that we are told. Mary says, I have just two words following the debate. Gavin Newsom. Actually, I do have more. Any younger person could easily defeat the Trumper. Thanks for your wide voices. I don't know how easy that is going to be for anybody, but I understand the point.
I don't disagree with her. I think there is a hunger today, mm-hmm. a desperation today for somebody to walk on the stage who fits some minimal. There is not a high bar.
Give me somebody
either.
In their 50s, yep. you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
I'm not a huge supporter of his, but I would take Pete Buttigieg. I mean, there is a benefit to, look, he was only a mayor of a small town. He ran for president. He ran a good campaign. And then it was smart for Biden to put him into the cabinet to run a very large agency. And he does very, very well when he testifies in Congress.
Yeah, he's
young.
Sharp.
He's vibrant. You know, the haters will come out because he's gay and adopted children, which I think is wonderful. And I think Buttigieg would, I mean, I'm not pushing him, but I think he'd be a viable
alternative. I was surprised at how much affection there was for him during the 2020 primary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think, does anybody think it's interesting that it's 10:15 and we haven't heard anything about the Supreme Court yet?
Maybe they're all so focused on
I know.
That.
Like, really? I'm wondering.
Well, they could be worried about how if like it's timing. A bad decision on immunity and how it plays with last night's debate.
All right. Let's go to Lee. Joe Biden's performance last night was sad and disappointing, but it shouldn't be surprising. This is the situation we've been in for a while now. If last night was news to us, I fear we've been living in a Democratic delusion. Well, I think that's a valid point mm-hmm. because this is what we've been told of sort of the reality. And I go back to something that Judith said earlier about the political, what was the word you used? Political
malpractice.
I was going to say malfeasance. Political malpractice that... The line had been, okay, but in the room, he is right. doing this, and this, even though we're not going to pull the curtain back and let you see him and have him take a... Do you remember, like, what was it when... Was it 2 weeks ago when he was overseas and they said it was... they were going to have him speak and they said it was going to be a press conference, and he was going to take questions on all manner of issues, mm-hmm. and then that just went away. And then they said no. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. Why that, I wonder?
They've been playing prevent defense with him for a long time, and it's despicable now. And they whomever has been doing this, is largely responsible for where we are, along with him and his family.
Craig makes this point. Every election cycle, we forget that the first debate only sets the bar for subsequent debates. In other words, if they can find the proper balance of meds, Biden might actually look good in the next one. Of course, that's if there is a next one. I would vote no.
Yeah, I think the damage is done. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, unlike, I mean, you can have a bad first debate, like a la Ronald Reagan mm-hmm. had a bad first debate and then comes back with the, mm-hmm. And it was age was an issue. And then he came back and criticized his opponent's relative youth and inexperience.
I'm not holding
the youth
experience against him.
Yeah, I mean, you can perform poorly in a way that it's just not up to par for your opponent. This is core essential acuity, and you can't like get that back, right? You can't just say, oh, he was just having a bad day because he's going to be president. What if he has a bad day when he's president? I mean, this is something that will get to the heart of people's confidence in being able to vote for him as president again. And I don't think a second debate could resolve this.
Barack Obama had a bad first debate. I think he admits that now. All of his people admit that now. But at no time prior to the debate were we saying that he was not competent to hold the office of president of the United States. And you can have a bad night. You can be cocky. You can think you have all the answers and you don't. This is different.
Yeah. Well, you know who has really been outspoken over the last 9 months about Biden needing to step aside is David Axelrod, who was a key Obama advisor, James Carville, who was a key Clinton advisor. And within our own household, my husband has been saying for a year, Biden is not up to it. And I just kind of at first I would fight with him over it, and then I tuned it out. And I feel like I missed how bad Biden's skill set is right now and his ability. And it's because he was hidden from us. I didn't appreciate the seriousness of the situation until last night. And I think I'm not alone.
Well, what I just on this thing about a second debate. On the eve of the second, that's now scheduled second debate, if Joe Biden is still the Democratic nominee or candidate for president, we're done. It doesn't matter what he does the next day. His ceiling is Biden. One or two cycles ago, obviously, as a VP, it doesn't matter. The Democrats are done at that point. So talking about a second debate with Biden in it is the same as conceding.
Let's go to Evelyn. Why didn't any of elected Democrats sound the alarm about Biden's condition? This is to your point. I mean, many have been. And I think also, and I don't mean to be mean, but like, it was pretty obvious. I mean, I think a lot of us. I saw Bill Maher at the palace a couple of weeks ago, and he said, "If you don't think that you're scared, then how come every time you watch him, you're doing it through your hands, you know, through your fingers, because your hand is over your face," and it got a huge laugh because I think a lot of people were in that position.
Well, but I think, Judith mentioned a couple of the people who were out there. Axelrod in particular was lambasted for his observation. Yeah. That's what happens when you speak the truth sometimes, and it's not what people want to hear. Unfortunately, you know, we're in a political world where people eat their own, and, you know, that would, I think, necessarily dampen the enthusiasm of anyone else who is willing to speak up. So
I think you got to be careful. We criticize the Republicans for being spineless and overly deferential to their leader. I don't know. What do you think about that phrase as applied? We say that about the Republicans,
right? No, it's a great point.
I mean, come on, the Nancy Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries, anyone who saw him operating and didn't speak up is responsible for this. And the other thing is, I don't.
So Nancy Pelosi is responsible for that and January 6th. Yeah. Come on, Mark.
And before anyone writes in and says a debate isn't what happens in the Oval Office, I get it. But let's go back to you got to win, right? Even if you could prove to me that once he gets into the Oval Office, he's going to be fine, just like he's been for the last. It's irrelevant if you can't get him there and you can't get this man into the Oval Office.
I'm not convinced he would perform well in the Oval Office
anymore. I'm not either, but my point is, even under that harebrained scenario, you still haven't gotten him into the Oval Office. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Vern's mad at us, or mad at me. Read my suggestions. He's written a couple of times, and I haven't read his suggestions yet. Chris Murphy, well, we mentioned Chris mm-hmm. Murphy, and Cory Booker. We mm-hmm. mentioned Cory Booker. So, okay, we read them, and those are good. I personally like Chris Murphy a lot, mm-hmm. And not just because he does our show.
And don't forget.
Although that doesn't hurt.
Don't forget Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. The ads write themselves.
Yes, that's. Yes, they
White
do.
House and the White House.
William says Tim Kaine is another good possibility. Excuse me. Let's go to this. All right, so the U.S. Supreme Court did say that cities can punish people for sleeping in public places. The decision is a win for Western cities that wanted more powers to manage record homelessness, but advocates for the unhoused say the decision will do nothing to solve the larger problem. So that is one decision that has come out from the Supreme Court today.
So where are homeless people supposed to sleep?
Hildegard says, my hunch is that the rigors of a European trip and a son's trial did Biden in. These things mm-hmm. let the last air out of his balloon. I mean, that's perfectly mm-hmm. possible, but we all have to deal with what we have to deal with. And I have to say there was, during the coverage of debates, there was during the coverage of this debate and the lead up to this debate, there were a couple of stories that were showing poor debate performances and what we mentioned, the first Obama debate against Romney and how that went really poorly. And they showed a clip of Joe Biden defending Barack Obama. This is 2012, defending Barack Obama in that debate. And that's really the first time I said, oh, wow, he's really coherent here. Like, this is a very different guy than we're seeing right now.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, he was 13 years younger or 12 years younger.
Well, just to the letter writer's point, if international travel and stomach-churning news is something you're not up for, then I'd suggest you not put your resume in to be president of the United States.
Right. I mean, the foreign trip is one thing. I mean, but having your, dealing with what.
Well, it was very emotionally difficult, but they knew it was coming.
Right.
And he doesn't travel like we travel. He doesn't have to go through the TSA line and sit.
He's got a really nice plane.
No space.
He can sleep on the plane.
Got a bedroom, for God's sake. Suzanne writes, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer. Also, the Supreme Court just outlawed homelessness in Iowa, just passed 6-week abortion ban. There's a lot. All right. Let's go to Michelle. Is there a reason we aren't talking about Michelle Obama?
Because she was against Biden running, and she's upset with the family, that issue.
I think they're talking about her running.
Cool. And her running.
She doesn't want to run. No, she's not a politician. She said, I'm not a politician. I don't want to be a politician.
I like the idea, but I don't.
She won't run.
She's not going to run.
Just as a, like, oh, okay, she would be mm-hmm. appealing. She's articulate and all that, but she doesn't want to be president.
Ezra Klein points out, says Marion, that the party's leadership and delegates at the convention have the opportunity to be more strategic than voters are on choosing a candidate who is electable. The convention would be exciting and get a lot of viewership. not every election where a candidate steps down is 1968. Remember, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. Otherwise, Dems would have done swimmingly in 68. Nor is every brokered convention a disaster. This was normal until recent decades. Lincoln was nominated on the third ballot. JFK was nominated in a brokered convention. That from Marion.
Who wants to read the rules of the Democratic Party in the convention and how you advance different names? I want to read them.
So let me ask a question, says Kathy. I just don't understand why the Democratic Party hadn't started grooming somebody, a younger politician, to be presidential candidate in 2024. It sounded like Joe Biden all of a sudden got old. Yes, we've been talking about that quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's part of the malpractice that Judith was talking about. I mean, there really isn't a viable plan B at this point, and it's going to take some scrambling.
William writes also on Tim Kaine. Judith says, I think Biden should be made to watch a replay of the debate and then decide if he thinks he should retire.
He'd fall asleep.
Wow. Oh. Really?
I think we need to plan his weekend. I think he needs 24 hours to absorb all this. He has to see the impact on the polls. We won't know that for a few days. He should be forced to watch the debate. And then they have to figure out who's the best person to convince him to drop out. So this is going to take a little bit of time. It can't take a lot of time because they're going to have to mobilize quickly on another candidate.
Yeah. The other thing they need to look at is the post-debate money.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's going to come in? And that will...
And all the money that's going to Trump today, he'll be fundraising off. I mean, he got a ton of money off his criminal convictions. Yeah. He'll get a ton of money today due to his debate performance.
A semi-legitimate win, right?
There's odds makers in Las Vegas. I don't gamble. Or, well, I should say I don't gamble effectively. but there's like an actual book on... with the likelihood of someone becoming president, and there was a shift of like 35 points after the debate last night.
It was... Well, the one I heard was 10 points. Futures markets do not predict the future. They show you how much people are willing to pay to avoid risk. But nonetheless, it was a meaningful, it went from, the one I heard about went from like 55 to 65% in favor of Trump, or 52 to...
Oh, this was a percentage likelihood of getting elected. And it was it went from 51 to 22 or something like that.
Oh, for
Biden?
Just for bookmaking.
I have
For Biden. Yeah, it was like 51% and it dropped down to like 20 or 22% or something like that.
I have 90 seconds to read four letters. Cheryl says, let's talk about Trump's lies last night. He is not presidential. He is a pariah. Also, Stacy said, too bad every American did not have the legitimate Democratic opportunity to hear Bobby Kennedy participate in the debate last night. Kennedy is polling numbers cannot be ignored. Mark says Joe Biden should always have been a one and done president with a younger candidate running in 2024. This election should have been a slam dunk for Democrats, but the inept leadership of the DNC chose to run an 81-year-old and never bothered to develop his understudy. Then we go to this letter from Ricky. President Biden must announce his intention to not seek re-election today. There are plenty of young Democratic stars like Governor Whitmer, Governor Newsom, Senator Warnock, etc. We can fill the void and be a formidable opponent to Donald Trump. Such a drastic change would also put media focus on the Democrats and away from the media-loving Trump. I do hope this happens today. We'll take a break. We'll continue when we come back with our panel. We do welcome your letters. Time for more panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back. Oh, you're all still arguing. We welcome you back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And the discussion goes on, even when we're in a break, and we'll continue that discussion now. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Flagged a couple that I want to read. For the love of God, do we have to spend the whole show tearing down Biden? Can you please talk about the ridiculous lies Trump said all night? Well, yeah. Look, I think we do a really good job, and I'm not patting myself on the back for this, but I think for the panel does a really good job day after day of pointing out all of those issues with Donald Trump. day after day after day after day, to the point where people write letters just like you did that said, why can't you talk about anything else? But I do think this is a moment where that the fact that we are having such trouble talking about that because of the performance that the President of the United States gave, I think tells you of why we're having this conversation.
And the only context for talking about Trump's lies, as somebody put it in a the more angry person on the CNN panel last night, who said he broke the fact check meter.
Yes.
I mean, it was just unbelievable. But the one that really stood out for me is, there were so many just bad lies there. But the one that stood out for me was when he said that he spoke, and it was just because it was this blather going on. You know, I think maybe a lot of people missed it, and Biden missed an opportunity there. I think it was probably the biggest missed opportunity of the evening when Trump said that he spoke to Putin about invading Ukraine.
Yes. Mm.
And it's like, wait a second. Mm. You, as the President of the United States, had a conversation with, in what context did Putin say, I think I'm invading Ukraine. Is that okay with you, Donald? You know, what?
Yeah, and that needed a follow-up question from the moderators.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, he was already in Ukraine during Trump's presidency. Remember, he had Crimea at that point.
At Crimea.
So I took it as...
But Trump was very specific about the invasion of
Ukraine. Look, I get the letter writer's point, but let's be really clear about what happened tonight. Yeah. Last night. Trump didn't win that debate. America and democracy lost that debate.
Trump won in the sense that he may have, that Biden lost, but I agree with you. I don't think Trump won the debate so much as Biden lost it, which is an odd thing.
Sergio writes, Andy Beshear is the perfect candidate to beat Trump. Jay writes, what are the panel's thoughts on how Biden's performance last night could impact or change our relations with other foreign powers, friendly and hostile? Mm. Well, it was a point, believe it or not, that Donald Trump was trying to make.
Look, I got to tell you, if you're in a foreign country today, and you're an ally of the United States, and you don't have nuclear weapons to defend yourself, like South Korea, like Japan, like others in Europe outside of France and Britain, you're thinking about developing those yourself. Because if Biden gets into the White House, he's not going to help you. I mean, on the international front, the risk of nuclear proliferation with Donald Trump in the White House is terrifying. And if you're a foreign leader, you're starting that today.
Lisa writes, despair comes to mind. I keep hearing Michelle Obama's High Road ringing in my ears. Judith, me too. I guess I didn't appreciate the seriousness. Then we go to, which perfectly brings up a note that we got that I thought was right into that, from Blake, who says, oh, look, a brick wall. Where did that come from? It makes me physically ill to listen to you educated, woke, hip, informed commentators acting all shocked and dismayed all of a sudden after 4 years of scoffing and derision at anyone who expressed any common sense and tried to warn the Democratic Party that they were on a collision course with disaster. Has it occurred to you, by normalizing this naive, unrealistic, Pollyannish mainstream malarkey on the air every day and wisely quashing dissent, that you are the problem?
Thank you.
Well said.
I don't agree with that. I mean, I think that there's, I do think, you know, this show is definitely left-leaning, always been more supportive of, Biden administration than certainly the Trump administration. But I also think this is political malpractice by the party. We don't sit in a conference room with him or in the Oval Office with him and see, you know, what his acuity is every day. So I think that's kind of unfair.
And I think that people saying that this shows that everyone was right all along, everyone who said that Biden was, you know, frail and incompetent all along, this proves they were right, I think is I'm not so sure that's just hindsight. That it's complicated, and I don't think we have time to explain it. But Judith, I think you're right that we missed things along the way. But I think that that's only because there's been a decline. I think it's been, I want to say, fairly recent. It wasn't through the whole presidency. This was a narrative that started the moment he was elected. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was true four years ago. And so, yeah, I think some of us are guilty of tuning it out because it seemed like so much partisan hype.
And it felt ageist. I mean, I remember talking to a friend last summer who's a doctor, and I just wanted a medical take on are you up to the job of being president when you're in your 80s? And he gave me some statistics on the number of older people who are like high performers and who are mentally and physically both there. And the numbers for when you're in your 80s is quite low. Mm-hmm. And so my friend said, it's possible that you know, we all know older people in their 80s and their 90s who thrive beautifully, but it's a very small percentage.
But there are, I mean, I worked for Senator Bruno when he was in his 80s, and he was sharp as a tack. And I had daily contact in the office with him, and he did not have any physical or mental decline into his 80s. Mm.
Let's go to Kurt, who says, whoa, pump the brakes. Can we please pump the brakes? It was a debate, not a car crash or a boat sinking.
It was a train wreck.
One man lied. One man had a bad performance. An old man who is a lying liar showed his true colors. An old man had a bad night. Well, if it's a bad night or if it's a bad performance, okay. But the problem is it underscored every concern that so many of us had and that so many people have been pointing to for a long time. And you saw it there and you kept on thinking, well, we're going to have a moment that will help displace that concern. And it never happened.
And Jay made such a good point earlier that the Trump voters are locked in. The Biden voters are locked in. Like, there's no way in God's green earth I will ever vote for Trump and vice versa. But the key thing are these independent voters in swing states. It's really just tens of thousands of voters that are going to decide this election. And they probably tuned in last night to see is Biden up for the job. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure most of them concluded no. So do they stay home? Do they panic over Trump and still vote for Biden? Do they vote for third party? Very good chance a lot of them are just going to skip voting.
Kathy writes, I attended substance abuse reduction conferences in D.C. in the early 2000s. At one of them, Joe Biden was the guest speaker. He was absolutely electrifying. Several hundred people on their feet shouting their approval midway through the address. It still gives me chills, and that memory alone makes last evening all the more heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And there were people on the panels last night who know Joe Biden, who've worked with Joe Biden, who were really sad because it's, you know, you don't want to see... You don't want to see a friend go through that.
You can see it in Axelrod.
If he stays...
He was just... Devastated.
Yeah. Devastated.
If he stays on the ticket, that is the campaign ad. They will find a clip of him, you know, rocking the house, and they will run it side by side with the clip where he started talking about COVID and Medicaid and it was all jumbled up. That will make a huge impression on people. And, you know, anyone who serves as president, they age in the office. Mm-hmm. Any clip
except
from
Trump. Yeah. He just got more orange. He didn't look like he aged.
any clip from 10, 15 years ago of Biden, he's going to look terrible side by side. And I just think that that's a huge vulnerability. If he were to stay in the race.
And it doesn't really matter how Biden feels. It doesn't really matter if we hurt his feelings and his family. The stakes are just too high.
Well, it goes to what Mark said. You got to win.
Right. You have to win the election if you want.
But Biden probably thinks he will win. That's, you know, last night with Biden saying I wasn't planning on running, but Trump was running, and Trump saying I wasn't planning to get into this, but Biden is running. I mean, I think Biden 4 years ago, wisely, you know, and remember, it was during COVID. So he was not out on all over the country on Air Force One campaigning. He was sequestered. He didn't have, you know, the intensity of the campaign to deal with that he will in the next few months.
Let's see. We have this from Anonymous, who says, Biden was obviously ill. It was obvious as soon as he opened his mouth. You could hear his raspy breathing. It sounded like someone with pneumonia. It did, but you can't. I mean, you made this point, Judith. You can't. You can
explain it away
right. with a cold.
Or at least if he had a bad cold, he should have opened up and say, I sound like this because I have a really bad cold. And someone should have given him like a big bag of cough drops and you know, a big caffeine hit before he went out. But
by the way, if any of us, and I think it probably goes to everyone in this room, anyone who does public speaking, when you go to the podium and you're feeling crappy, you say, hi, I'm feeling crappy, but
exactly.
Here we go. You know, like this is...
You explain it.
Like, right. My voice isn't sounding the best tonight, but I'm going to do... Mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, I got this tickle on, but I'm going to go right through. I mean, that's sort of...
Basic stuff.
That's Toastmaster 101, I believe. All right. Mary Jo writes, what happened between the State of the Union and last night? Well, I mean, look, we talked about this earlier. I don't know. I have certainly had people in my life who I have seen a precipitous decline in a matter of weeks or months, and at one point they were much sharper than they were just a few weeks later. Look, and there's this term for reason, which is like, you know, they have their good days and their bad days. And that's an up and down. And I think, Mark, you made this point, but do you want that? Like, you want somebody who's always having a pretty good day, or at least can deal with a bad day. And
because anything could happen any day Oval Office.
That's right.
I think that goes to the question and the heart of that issue of, you know, our culpability in any of this, that up until a few months ago, it wasn't that obvious. Up until last night, it wasn't that obvious. Well, I think in the weeks before, you know, there was a Daily Show a few weeks ago after Trump's conviction where Jon Stewart pulled up the clip of somebody asking Biden as he was walking out of the press conference, what do you have to say about the conviction? And Biden turned around and didn't say anything, just kind of smiled. And Jon Stewart just said, why does everything have to be so weird?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did a kind of spoof, and they did like a 70s sitcom kind of title over it that was like, and Joe Biden as Colonel Butters. It was something like that. It's recent.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, the Supreme Court, CNN's reporting that the Supreme Court is limiting obstruction charges in the January 6th case. So I want to we'll try to find out as much information as we can about that ruling and talk about that as we go into some extra innings and bring up to the top of the hour this morning. My thanks for all of you and your patience. There's a lot of letters we're not probably going to get to this morning, but I think you get the tenor of them, right? You get the tone. I think we get the gist. We'll take a break and be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Judith Hink, Jay Jochnowitz, and Mark Whitman. Heather Mulligan was with us, but was unable to go into extra innings with as she had an appointment at 11 o'clock. So and we let her go because
there was nothing we could do.
Really nothing to do. That's right. She has work to do, and that's very important that work get done. Okay. So justices. limiting obstruction charges in January 6th rioters case. Has anyone been able to find out some information on? I have been unable so far to find detailed information.
I'm reading the other case.
Okay, and the other case being the Chevron case. Yeah. Tell us about
this. This is devastating. So this is a case, Chevron versus Natural Resources Defense Council. And the law of the land is when you have technical, detailed decisions to make, you have what's called Chevron deference. It's a weird phrase, but it basically means you defer to the Environmental Protection Agency experts on the Clean Air Act. You defer to the FDA on food and drug issues. You defer to the FTC on commerce issues. And by a 6-3 vote, the Supreme Court threw out 40 years of practice, and they obliterated the concept of the Chevron deference. There were 70 Supreme Court decisions relying on Chevron, along with 17,000 lower court decisions. And, you know, I'm not saying EPA is always right, but EPA has scientists and engineers and policy experts. And they are looking out for the public interest as opposed to fossil fuel companies or chemical companies. So the Supreme Court says these federal agencies no longer have deference in legal challenges. This was 6-3 decision. This is very bad for anyone who wants to drink clean H2O or breathe clean air.
Another 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a former police officer who is seeking to throw out an obstruction charge for joining the Capitol riot on January 6th, 2021, in a ruling that could benefit former President Donald Trump. The justices, on a 6-3 vote, handed a win to defendant Joseph Fisher, who was among hundreds of January 6th defendants, including former President Trump, who had been charged with obstructing an official proceeding over the effort to prevent Congress's certification of President Joe Biden's election victory. The court concluded that the law enacted in 2002 as part of an act after the Enron accounting scandal was only intended to apply in limited circumstances involving tampering with physical evidence. And so as to how that will actually impact Donald Trump is still up in the somewhat up in the air. The court sent the case back to lower courts for further proceedings on whether the Justice Department could still prosecute Fisher under the new interpretation of the law. To what extent the ruling favors Trump remains to be seen, Mark.
CNN's initial reaction to that ruling was that Jack Smith is still likely to continue to pursue the same charges because in Trump's case, the allegations are that he actually was trying to stop the physical act of having the ballots counted. The more likely application of that seems to be for those folks who broke into the Capitol, but probably many of them couldn't articulate exactly what they were trying
to
do.
They were tourists.
Well, no, but many of them probably didn't. You know, if you said, well, there's a certification of the Electoral College today, please explain in two sentences or more, they probably would have failed that quiz question. So I think it's a pretty limited ruling, but it probably will cause many of the of those who Trump refers to as the J6 hostages to have their cases reviewed.
And reviewed is the point. That it's not. There were multiple charges against most of them, and so there's one charge among many, or at least several for most of them that you know they'll end up with reduced sentences and so forth. You know, I think you know I say this more than once that you know having a lawyer in the family, I'm well aware that you know you're trained as lawyers, and these are all lawyers on the Supreme Court, to find whatever argument you need to find. And I think they looked for the argument here. They looked for the answer here, and they found it, oddly enough, in a very broad law that does not specifically say what they claim. I haven't read the decision, but the claim has been that the law doesn't say not physical evidence, you know, non-physical evidence. Well, the law is very broad. It was broadly written. And if they were looking for a reason to uphold the law, they would say it was broadly written because Congress wanted it to be broadly interpreted, that you don't interfere violently with or in other ways conspiratorially with government administration. That's a crime. And they could have upheld that as a crime. And, you know, six of them decided they didn't want to.
Well, 6-3 is significant. And I think Sonia Sotomayor foreshadowed this a few weeks ago when she was interviewed and said there are days that she's just, you know, beside herself and in tears and has to go into her office and close the door. And then she said there's going to be more situations like this as the decisions come down.
Can we talk briefly about being disappointed and in tears? I just want to add for back to Joe's point originally at the beginning of the hour about this being a therapy session. I think it's important that everybody who's involved in a civic organization that helps defend democracy and the vulnerable think about a plan B in light of what we just saw happen last night. I think all of us need to be good to ourselves, and we need to find others to be good too, because this is tough, what we saw last night and the risks that we all face. And the best thing we can each do personally is try to insulate ourselves by doing the best we can for ourselves and for the others that are close to us while we ride through all this.
And the broader community.
And the broader community. Yeah. I agree with you.
We're all going to be fine. We got big gardens and we can heat our homes, but there are a lot of vulnerable people who are not going to be fine. And these decisions this morning just put an exclamation point on how high stakes this is.
And I don't know that we're done with the decisions yet. I haven't heard.
No.
Usually the court will say if that was it. But I thought everything had to be out by today. I don't know.
They've extended it to Monday.
To Monday? Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll...
Which is unusual. They've never done July decisions, but we can guess why they're waiting till Monday.
I would think makes sense.
And then they leave town.
All right. My thanks to all of you. A hell of a morning. Hell of a 24-hour period, actually. But thank you all very much. We'll be back right after this.